This is the one set in a service station.
That features a stylophone.
And people getting ripped apart.
Oh, and don't forget about the MP3 player.
It's called Horror Glam Rock.
Here we go.
We're embarking on a voyage all through time and all through space, encountering Dalek, Stalinude, and the Cybertronic race. The Tarans look like taters, and Silurians all have wonky scales, and the Doctor has a TARDIS. We're reviewing all his tales. Who back when? Reviewing all of who there is. Who back when? Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please. Episode by episode, we're trudging down this temporal road. Come join us on this odyssey. What other choice could there be than who back when?
Who back when?
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode A002 of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. Today, I am once again joined by JD. I'm Ponkin, by the way. JD, hello, how are you doing?
Yes, you are. I'm fine, thank you.
Today, we will be reviewing Horror of Glam Rock. And, oh my god, the horror. Okie dokie, JD, we forgot something last week.
It's the bite-sized chunk of Who.
Oh, God. Bite-sized. It's tiny. How can we remember it? Would you like to start us off on a bite-sized chunk of Who, a horror of glam rock?
The Doctor and Lucy arrive in Northern England in 1974.
And immediately stumble upon a dead glam rocker.
And enter a service station on the M62.
Very good memory. And in this service station also, we meet a band manager, a disillusioned waitress.
A pair of twins, one of whom is totally bonkers.
And then, all of a sudden, there's an alien ambush.
And the entire thing is solved by technology.
That's a pretty good bite size. All right, are you intrigued? I hope you're intrigued. Shall we get started? Let's get cracking.
On board the TARDIS, the Doctor and new companion Lucy are having a little bit of turbulence.
I think the technical term is wibbly wobbly. They are, I'm picturing them in those old school weight loss machines with the rubber band around the midriff that just sort of gyrates and vibrates constantly.
Yeah, she doesn't feel very well. She keeps threatening to throw up. And, you know, for stomach upset, you really shouldn't be taking ibuprofen, which sadly will become a plot point later on. But, you know, that'll just likely to make her worse, to be honest. It'll probably give her quite a big stomachache.
That's true. Actually, you know what? I'm going to potentially already reveal how poor my memory is. Do we not actually start off with a tiny little glimpse of an emo soliloquy accompanied by that self-same music? I use music here in inverted commas. That, like we said before we press record, almost zombie-like in its levels of annoyance. Is that not how we start this episode? I'm pretty sure it is.
Yes, it is. I've managed to block it from my mind, so yeah, I do apologise. throughout this episode, we will get a few bites of a Stephen Gately song called Children of Tomorrow, which is sung by Stephen Gately, and it was his last ever single that he did, that he released. And unfortunately, it will plague us through this entire episode.
Yeah, it's terrible.
So we do get that at the start and all the way through. Stephen Gately plays one of the characters inside the episode, and he does sing the theme tune to this song.
Yeah. So. That's true. But we also get, as in, this music accompanies part of a soliloquy, and it's basically this kid going, well, there's something out there, and they're coming, and we're going to meet up, and basically I'm going to go into the cosmos, and that's it.
It is very 1970s. It's very Age of Aquarius.
Oh, yes. Anyway, sorry, ladies and gentlemen, for confusing, whatever. All right, fade to interior TARDIS, wibbly wobbly, we've covered that. Boom, take it away, JD.
So it then gets thrown around. And then it stops.
Yeah.
The Doctor, yeah, it's all over. And the Doctor decides that they're a bit hungry, so it's time to stop off and get a bite to eat.
Yeah. And where better to go and have lunch than in 1974?
It's quite late at night, and travelling down the M62 in snow is Arnold Korns.
Oh my god, Arnold Korns, who is portrayed by the amazing Bernard Cribbins.
Now, Bernard Cribbins, OBE, let's not forget.
Oh, apologies, Bernie.
Has really bookended quite a lot of Doctor Who. He, of course, has recently played Donna Noble's grandfather. Mm-hmm. He then became a companion in his own right in David Tennant's last story. But right back at the beginning, he played a character called Tom, who was the Ian substitute in Daleks Invasion Earth with Peter Cushing, one of the two movies.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I haven't seen it, but I remember reading it on IMDb.
And he played Tom, who was a policeman.
Okay.
That was basically the Ian substitute. He was the male, you know, the young male lead. Bernard Cribbins.
Hang on, slides Peter Cushing tangents. Is there not an Ian in the Cushing movies?
There is an Ian in the first movie.
But not in the second one?
No.
Oh,
he's called Tom.
Daddy, I am appalled.
The movies are in their own universe. There is no way to bring it into this one. They are very different. The Doctor's granddaughter, for example, was 7 years old and really his granddaughter.
Yeah. He's not an alien.
He's a man who built a time machine. Yeah.
Peter Cushing tangent over. Really want to watch those films.
So Bernard Cribbins was also the voice of the Wombles to another entire generation of people.
Okay.
And if you didn't know that, you won't get one of the in-jokes later on in the episode.
Oh, dag nabbit. No, I most likely will not have gotten that.
So Arnold Korns, in his car, has Trisha Tomorrow.
And Tommy Tomorrow, a.k.a. the Tomorrow Twins.
That are apparently one of the new up-and-coming great bands that the 1970s had.
And I don't understand this at all, because Trish Tomorrow seems like a really friendly girl. Tommy, on the other hand, is a complete emo, void of all personality, and very frequently goes into trance.
He was played by a singer, so he wasn't actually played by someone that had done any voice acting.
Any acting, yeah.
So he was, to be fair, meant to be playing someone who was a bit emo. Even though emos apparently didn't exist in the 1970s, he would be considered on drugs today.
Yeah, most likely.
Trisha really is quite the sensible one, because she points out when Arnold Korns is about to take them into a service station for sausage and chips that it looks like any other grotty motorway service station.
Yeah. And coincidentally, this is the exact same establishment that is soon to be frequented by Doc and Lucy.
Because if it wasn't, that would get a really boring episode very quickly.
Actually, I don't know. I would almost have preferred the story had they gone entirely their separate ways. Anyway, Tommy snaps out of his trance and he goes, they're here, Trish. They've arrived ahead of us. So it turns out, essentially, that he at least believes that he's communicating with someone while he is in trance. And going into trance, the way he accomplishes this is he has a stylophone that sounds a little bit like this.
Are you still there? Are you listening to me?
Which helps the hell out of anyone. And he will play the exact same tune on it over and over again throughout the episode.
Trisha Tomorrow, who is played by Claire Buckfield.
No idea.
Claire Buckfield is not a famous actress, but she deserves our sympathy.
Okay.
Because for 10 years, she was the girlfriend of Deck out of Ant and Dec.
Oh, wow.
So she deserves sympathy, wine, chocolates, you know. As they enter the cafe, they pass a strange man in a top hat who's coming out of the service station.
Yeah.
And outside, the man starts talking to himself about how he's split up his band and how he needs to get away from the music business and from Pat.
This guy basically sounds like Neil from The Young Ones.
Weirdly, this is the reverse of what normally happens at this point, because I've never seen that.
Oh my god. Don't worry about it. But yeah, sorry, you were saying, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
So he regrets storming out in his clothes, but he thinks that Pat will think he's a bit nuts and crazy. And then
he utters the powerful last word.
Strange ethereal music comes up.
Yeah. And he utters the powerful last word, cripes, and is promptly and brutally eaten alive by something.
And again, it's another one of these examples where the sound effects really do bring home the fact that he's being disemboweled by a strange alien creature.
Yeah, there is crunching involved. It is very, very brutal. And it's quite strange because these sound effects and some of the themes in the story in general, again, slight tangent, they are very, very, I'm going to say adult in the sense of they should almost be X-rated. They are so, so vicious. And they juxtapose certain other themes in this story that are terribly childish.
Yeah. I think that there is a lot of things around when we'll get to it, Pat and her relationship with others of the characters, and you know how the music business back in those days, you know, did discard people when they were of no use to them anymore.
Yeah,
and you get that juxtaposed by the stylophone and anything where Tommy's in the scene.
Yeah, true. And spoiler alert, the ending. But we'll get to that. Anyway,
so, title sequence.
Theme music. Yeah.
Horror of Glam Rock by Paul Mars, who is another one of the people who we will be coming back to again and again.
Does he write good stuff as well?
he's no Bill Strutton. Okay. But what he is there are three stories which form a trilogy, and this is the first of them.
Oh, really? Okay. Will I... feel free to spoil this for me. Will I come to appreciate this first installment of said trilogy more once I've listened to all three?
No.
Okay, thank you.
The TARDIS materialises on the hard shoulder of the motorway.
Yeah, and the doc quite suddenly starts dropping names of various musicians, including Mr. Eno himself.
So...
Yeah, go for it.
The Doctor and Lucy step out into the snow, and he tells Lucy that they're in 1974, and he can't wait to show her ketchup in the shape of tomatoes.
Yeah.
Now, my knowledge of 1974, which is the year I was born, indicates to me that there are more exciting things in the world than ketchup and tomatoes, but not apparently to the McGann Doctor.
Well, he's also talking about various kinds of music. He's like, oh, it's the birthplace of modern electronic music, and he seems quite au fait with pop culture. But then also the kitsch elements of 1974, such as said ketchup bottles shaped like tomatoes.
Well, when you think about it, and depending on the Doctor Who unit dating controversy, which is a real thing, that this could have been the era in which John Pertwee's Doctor was exiled to Earth. So it would make sense that if he was exiled to Earth around this time,
yeah,
that he would know a lot of the pop culture from this era.
That's very true. That makes perfect sense. Actually, that almost follows the whole Day of the Doctor element of what happens to one Doctor is immediately made aware to the next or future Doctors. Anyway.
They head over to go and get a sausage roll with probably covered in tomato ketchup. And they find the dead body of Before the Intros.
Exactly, of Mr. Top Hat himself. And the Doc, whilst paying his respects, also deduces, based on the clothing of said dead glam rocker, that he was in fact right, and it must be 1974, which I think is a lovely little detail.
Whereas Lucy just thinks it's a transvestite pile-up on the M62.
Yeah, nice comment there. So, anyway, meanwhile, in the service station, these two ladies are talking. One of them is the disillusioned waitress, and the other one is Pat. And Top Hat, it turns out, was Mr. Bendy Rogers, who had just split up the band Mentholated Spirits. Great band name.
Pat was apparently the drummer of Mentholated Spirits. They'd also lost their singer. And
Bendy and Pat.
She's been kicked out of an awful lot of bands, and she's really getting used to this.
Yes, she is.
Outside, the Doctor, checking over this person, makes a very interesting comment that this place must be Nadir Services, just outside of Bramlington, and it's going to be a long night.
You're right. So he actually knows what's going to happen, doesn't he?
Yeah, and this is what leads us to believe that he didn't come here by accident.
Yeah.
He doesn't really travel anywhere by accident. And while he's not, you know, as manipulative as some of the Doctors, this was not a chance encounter.
That's very true. I didn't think about that until literally just now when you said that.
It's one of these things. And he says something later on, which also makes you believe that he was here deliberately. And when we get more information about one of the females in this episode in later Doctor Who episodes.
Same trilogy.
Okay. It could be that he was trying to do something deliberate, but we don't know yet.
Okay. Interesting.
So back inside the service station, the waitress says that, you know, she's worked here for a long time. She works in the middle of the night and she's seen an awful lot of these musicians come and go. And she mentioned meeting Jimi Hendrix, Lulu, and Wombles.
The Wombles. Yep.
So, you know, every time she sees a star come in and, you know, become great in the music world, there's also an awful lot of people that get put to one side.
True. At which point, enter Arnie and the Tomorrow Twins, and the waitress recognizes him. No, sorry, Pat recognizes him as the famous band manager, Arnold Korns, who once saw the mentholated spirits and completely shunned them because he thought that they were, well, subpar. Meanwhile, the waitress recognizes the Tomorrow Twins, and Trish is super chuffed to find out that, oh my god, hey, Tommy, can you believe this? We were just recognized by someone. And he is still lost in his trance. He's still just, oh, who cares about fame and fortune and music and fans and groupies? All he wants is to be in touch with the cosmos.
And the waitress, who's called Flo, is played by Una Stubbs.
Who's that?
Now, Una Stubbs is currently on our television screens as Mrs. Hudson in Stephen Moffat's reimagining of Sherlock.
Oh, no way.
But in olden days, there was John Pertwee, who obviously played the Doctor, after he left Doctor Who, went on to star in another seminal kids' TV show, which was called Wurzel Gummidge.
Okay.
And his love interest, Aunt Sally, was played by Una Stubbs.
Oh, wow.
So another Doctor Who connection there.
Nice. Very nice. It's like tangent. Am I right in assuming that she was quite cute back in the day?
For 1970s, yes.
Nice. I shall Google image search her later on. Right.
And Flo, as you said, recognises them as the Tomorrow Twins, but she doesn't call them the Tomorrow Twins. She calls them the Tomorrow People.
Oh, yeah.
And that's, of course, a reference to the 1970s children's TV show, The Tomorrow People.
Which is currently being remade in the States.
Badly.
Oh, I haven't seen the remake yet.
So,
Cablamo, enter Doc and Lucy. Oh, we should say the Tomorrow Twins are going to be featured on Top of the Pops the following day. Right, so enter Doc and Lucy.
And they're looking around for whoever's running the place.
Yeah.
Because they want to find out why there is a dead glam rocker outside.
Yeah, but they try to keep this very sort of on the down low. Instead of immediately asking, where is there a phone? Can someone please ring the police? Or, you know, tell people that there's a dead body outside. They ask for a cup of tea and are immediately refused by Flo because it's the end of her shift. But she does say that her colleague, and I quote, Dirty Linda, is on her way.
And let's be honest, at this point, Lucy, who has commented on the clothing of the glam rocker rather than the fact that it was torn apart by some sort of animal, now wanders into a service station, has completely obviously forgotten about the dead body that's outside, and is only worrying about the lack of cleanliness in 1970s service station. She is like the comfortable trousers of time travel.
Don't explain this.
You know, she doesn't care about how exciting it is to travel back into her own past, to be able to go and, you know, revisit some of the things that's happened, you know.
Yeah.
She doesn't care about going and finding, you know, her mother in 1974 and telling her, you know, here are the lottery numbers and go and put money on Shergar in 1980. That's no, what she cares about is what the clothes are like, how clean things are, you know, She is a much more practical companion than a lot of the others.
Okay, that is true.
It's almost like she doesn't care about the time travel.
That's true, actually. But I'm thinking that must change at some point.
You'll find out as you go through these audio reviews.
Yeah, yes I will. So anyway, Flo and Pat, they leave, and Doc and Lucy do finally try the phones. The phones are all dead. We should mention, by the way, before Mr. Korns and the Tomorrow Twins arrived, there was a power cut, but this power cut, it seems to me, is of no consequence to anyone. The power must be back on now, otherwise someone would have commented on it. Doc and Lucy certainly would have.
In the 1970s, there were quite a lot of blackouts in the UK. And from January to March in 1974, they introduced a 3-day week because there wasn't enough capability of generating blackouts, and there was a lot of strikes on at these times. And so they had something called a rolling blackout, which were electricity delivery would stop for periods of time. So in 1974, blackouts would not be particularly uncommon. It was to conserve coal and, you know, a lot of these things. So,
I had no idea.
Yeah. So it wouldn't have been particularly strange to have a blackout in 1974 England.
Interesting. That's a really cool detail to put into the story. Never mind that I didn't understand it. It's a very cool detail just to add a little bit of authenticity.
Yes, you know, the Big Finish stories seem like they've been quite well researched. And Paul Mars has done quite a lot of them and done quite a lot of Doctor Who short stories. So he's quite a veteran at this, so he probably has done quite a bit of research.
Okay. Well, okay, back to the story.
Pat and Flo are heading towards their car. And they're discussing the Doctor and Lucy. And Flo, the waitress, once more comments that the Doctor looks like a hippie. So, you know, this is the second episode out of two where his dress sense has been completely criticised by the supporting characters.
True.
So maybe this is why he ends up wearing the leather jacket in Night of the Doctor, because he's so sick of people picking on him.
So then Doc and Lucy, they try the phones are all dead, and Arnie pops up, and we get a tiny piece of sort of doctoral exposition, where he just essentially relays exactly everything that we need to know of the story so far. He basically gives Arnie a bite-sized chunk of Who.
Soundbite?
Sure, soundbite.
Mr. Corns, there's a corpse out there in the car park.
What?
The savaged body of a dead glam rocker.
A dead glam rocker?
And there you go. Now you're up to speed. This is then followed by one of the dumbest "you must be joking" cliches from Trish, which is, at this point, I didn't realize where she was from at first. I thought at first she was American. But the second, I know, then shortly thereafter I realized where she's from. She's Irish, Miss Pam.
I didn't notice that.
I think she's Irish. Which is weird because her brother doesn't sound Irish, but she does.
I think it's a case of that she was obviously trying to put on a different accent to her own. It could very well be that she was trying to be Irish, but she certainly didn't have the same accent as her brother.
No.
Well, her brother didn't actually have an accent.
No.
Or any tone in his voice. It was very BBC received pronunciation accent.
Yeah, whilst also sounding, no pun intended, spaced out.
Yeah, and bear in mind, though, that Stephen Gately was part of an Irish band.
True, very true. Wait, hang on. Is it Boyzone or... Is it Boyzone? It's not Boyzone. It's one of the other boy bands.
It was...
Boyzone. You're Googling it. I can see you're Googling
it. I'm Googling it. It was Boyzone.
It was Boyzone. Bingo.
And he is actually Irish.
Oh, nice. So he is trying to affect a non-Irish accent, while his sister, who is not Irish, is trying to affect an Irish one. That's fantastic.
It's either that, or we're really bad at guessing accents. It's one of the two things.
Not at all unlikely. Anyway, the Doctor reveals, yes, there's a dead glam rocker outside. Arnie repeats this quite loudly, and this is where we get that "you must be joking" cliche. Trish basically goes, "Oh my god, that just cannot be true!" And then does a full 180 within 2 seconds and essentially panics.
Pat and Flo are really close to her car.
Yeah.
And then they start hearing the sound of monsters.
Yep.
Flo drops the car keys, and Pat sees them coming towards them. So, basically, they end up running back to the service station.
Yeah. Is it just me, or did the beasts outside start tearing her Mini to smithereens?
The
Mini still works later on.
Yeah, they tore the door off the Mini.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, let me just make a tiny observation. When they arrive back in the service station, Flo refers to these beasts, these monsters, as having scales and tails. And Pat, meanwhile, refers to them as fanged and bear-like. These are two very different descriptions of monsters. One is furry, the other one is scaly.
And this is one of my main problems with this episode. These beasts which are terrorizing the service station are never really fully described.
No, and they're not even fully explained.
That's also true.
Yeah.
So they're inside, and we get a 10-second interlude, which is inside of Tommy's head, and he can hear voices going, "Are you still there? Are you listening to me?" And he's trying to talk to them. And unfortunately, every time we're inside Tommy's head, we get this annoying xylophone music.
Yeah.
And since we're inside Tommy's head a lot, we get a lot of xylophone music. But now that we're back inside the cafe, we do actually get one of my favourite lines in the episode.
Is this the With Nail and Eye reference?
No, it isn't the With Nail and Eye reference, because I didn't get the With Nail and Eye reference. Okay. I know that's one of your favourite movies.
It is, yeah.
I've only ever seen it once, so... Yeah, go on, you first.
No, sorry, I cut you off. What is your favourite line?
Trisha and Lucy are talking, and Trisha says, "Hi, I'm Trisha Tomorrow." And Lucy just completely deadpans and says, "And I'm Lucy from the day after tomorrow." And she does the delivery far better than I do.
"I'm Lucy from the day after tomorrow." Neat.
But Lucy gets most of the good lines in this episode, the same as she did in Blood of the Daleks. And Sheridan Smith's delivery is still spot on, even with the script collapsing around her. She is still, you know, trying to keep this together.
I totally agree. I really like this actress. I think she's really good.
Yeah, she doesn't get worse.
Well, the With an Eye reference, I reckon this is a With an Eye reference, and it must be, because Paul McGann is super famous for his performance as Marwood in With an Eye. We got one in episode one. In episode two, here he's having a chat with Arnie, who's making a fuss about how they need to leave in order to make it to Top of the Pops. And Doc goes,
"If you go out there tonight, the only thing you'll be on is the news."
Which is super similar to a Withnell eyeline. Withnell, namely, says,
"The only program I'm likely to get on is a fucking news."
With Lennon and I reference.
There are so many references in this episode that it doesn't surprise me. You get Breaking of the Band.
Stairway to Heaven.
Yes, you get Oi Doctor, Leave Those Kids Alone.
Yes. Oh, that's
so it wouldn't surprise me. This is much more of a...
It's fan service through and through.
Yeah, it's a comedic episode.
Yeah.
Much more than the last one was. Even though some of the themes in it are quite dark, it's still a lot more comedy than Blood was.
Yeah. True. So then, Flo and Pat return to see the Doctor basically organising troops, and Lucy and the twins, they head upstairs where Brian Emo is promptly unpacking and starting to play his super annoying tube again. But this time, we're privy to the response, and in my opinion, when we hear the response, as in there is an actual alien response from the cosmos through the music, in my opinion, this is where the story goes from meh to ugh. Because these aliens are incredibly annoying and incredibly childish.
They are. And the voice actor that does them...
Is the same voice actor who does the Headhunter.
Yes. And she's actually very good. She's in a lot of the Big Finish audios.
Okay.
So she's either playing the Headhunter or she's playing another part, because she does an awful lot of voices. And she's very, very good.
Oh, I don't doubt it. I don't doubt that every actor in this episode, Mr. Gately not included, is a fantastic actor, but the script is really annoying. And it's this weird pendulum between adult and childish, and that really just gets on my nerves. I think it should pick one and stick with it.
Big Finish do a lot of different audiobooks.
Okay.
And they did it from a lot of different series. And they do this story a bit better in another Doctor Who one, which I dare say in 6 or 7 years we'll get to,
which is
called Whispers, I think it's Whispers of Terror.
Okay.
Which is very, very good. It's this idea of I won't spoil it, but it's this idea, but done better.
Okay.
They also do Sapphire and Steel, which does Trapped in One Location and Strange Things Happening better.
Okay.
So this feels like almost like the best of Big Finish, but not done as well.
Interesting.
So Lucy and Trisha, back on the plot, go up to try and seal off the other entrance. Pat and Flo sealed off one of the entrances, but there's this glass walkway above the motorway. And they're going to go and seal that off. So Lucy and the Tomorrow People head over there. And, you know, Trish sort of goes, you know, you're taking this in your stride. And Lucy just goes, well, she's seen it all before. And then Lucy just says that she can't shake the feeling that the leather-clad rocker Pat seems familiar.
Mm.
Trisha, who obviously, you know, watches the news and watches Top of the Pops religiously, says, nah, I'd know her if she was famous. And then Lucy goes, ah, well, she's probably no one special. Then Tommy appears, because he was just behind them in one of his trance-like states, and says that they're all no one special. They're all just people on this little world.
Oh, God. Now I know what this is. This is the terrible emo line from Tommy.
This is the terrible emo whine. Basically, even Trisha has had enough of her brother at this point.
Yeah.
And points out that he's been different ever since he started playing with the xylophone. So what we now learn is that this entire plot is caused by this xylophone.
Yeah.
Which is irritating Trisha. It is irritating
us,
and if it hadn't been for this stylophone, we wouldn't have had to sit through this episode.
Yeah, and probably a lot more people would be, you know, unharmed or, I dare say, alive. Spoiler alert.
So Tommy uses the stylophone to write all of their songs.
What? Why would anyone want to listen to this pair of twins watch them on Top of the Freaking Pops? They've got a stupid xylophone, and genuinely, what's-his-face, Arnie Korns, even says there is only one tune that he will play on this xylophone, and he plays it incessantly. He plays it ad nauseum and has done so for ages.
So it's rather like Coldplay, then.
It is a little bit, isn't it? Oh, God. All right. Okay. Where are we now? What's going on? So, oh, yeah, the Doc and the grown-ups, they are downstairs and they stop to watch as the creatures outside are vandalizing Arnie's Bentley. That's where we are, right?
Correct.
Okay. And then when Arnie just goes, oh, my God, this is my Bentley. I bought that Bentley with my first, what was it, his first sale, his first platinum album or something like that. Then Pat, a.k.a. Patricia Ryder of Mentholated Spirits, has a go at him for being complete bellend. And the Doc calms them and then sets off after Lucy and Twin. Sorry, I'm speeding through this.
Although Arnold does get a very good line in and is convinced that the Doctor is in show business. Because of the costume and the wig. The Doctor actually has a really good retort to this by saying that this is actually quite sober from where I come from.
Yes, that's
and
a
if you consider
beautiful line.
The Time Lord robes with the big helmet, that
it's probably
like, quite
oh,
right.
I'm actually in the star business myself.
I can't remember him saying that, but you know, it does sound like that something he'd say.
Mm. So he sets off after Lucy and the twins, and he finds them, and Tommy actually goes, "Oh, you're the Doctor," adding that Lucy hasn't told him. Doctor even asks, like, did Lucy tell you? No, she didn't say anything. So now we also know that, well, we can presume that he must have heard the name The Doctor from someone else, i.e. presumably the same lame voices in his stylophone. Back at the bar, meanwhile, it transpires there are other characters around whom we haven't heard speak at all so far, including Ron, whom we don't know, who is a roadie from the band Contretemps, hitherto unmentioned, who tries to make a break for his van outside, which I might add is an alternative mode of transport that's never come up in conversation before. Ron dies loudly within 2 seconds of attempting to escape.
And we have a really good scene of Arnold being completely unconcerned about Ron dying.
Yeah, that's true.
And
everyone objects
is,
to this attitude.
Yeah, you know, Arnold is quite obviously disliked by every single person in the service station.
Yeah.
Sadly, it's slightly ruined by having Bernard Cribbins as Arnold. Because Bernard Cribbins is
a likable guy.
A likable guy. He is the grandfather to the entirety of the world. You know. And he's a nice person. And even his delivery of his lines is nice. It could have done with someone who has this sort of grumbling, miserable, you know, violent attitude.
Yeah.
And sadly, it's played by Bernard Cribbins, who, don't get me wrong, I would want in every single one of these playing a different part. But a nice grandfatherly figure.
It's difficult to have him be the antagonist.
Well, bear in mind that Lucy asks the Doctor to punch him at this point. So, you know, it's not good. After this, Flo starts cooking up some food for everyone.
Yeah.
And Lucy and the Doctor have a little sit-down chat with each other. And Lucy realises that everywhere the Doctor goes, trouble follows. He says he doesn't go out and try and find it, but it just finds him.
Mm.
Lucy comments that the same thing happens to her. And then she says they make a great pair and she's glad they met. And he agrees. Now, last week, it ended up with the Doctor and Lucy leaving and the Doctor wishing he could palm her off somewhere. Still.
That's true.
And Lucy didn't want to be with him at all. So some time must have elapsed between the end of Blood of the Daleks and this episode.
Oh,
I'm
sure.
It can't be followed on.
I very much got the impression at the start of this episode that they had sort of gone off on other adventures in the meantime. They'd been to some places, it had all been very calm, there had been no trouble. They'd maybe gone to a beach somewhere, but they'd at least been on some adventures. And now they just wanted a break. There was never any talk of, let's go and be somewhere where there aren't Daleks. Let's go and have lunch in a world that is not post-apocalyptic. It was literally just, let's have a break. Let's stop for lunch.
Yeah, and they obviously had the chance to get to know each other. They got a chance to actually start liking each other.
Yeah.
And this is a very different Lucy from the last episode. She's still fiery, she's still sarcastic, but she's actually now likable.
Yeah, well, I thought she was quite likable the last time as well. Did you not?
It was one of these things where Lucy was a great character, played wonderfully by Sheridan Smith, but she had the Donna Noble thing of she could become really grating if she'd have continued being like that, and it couldn't have been sustained, that this sort of incredibly sort of toxic relationship that they had in Blood of the Daleks, at least to me. That's my opinion.
Sure. Yeah, well, fair enough. I personally think that their relationship was only grating and founded in negativity for the first half, for roughly the first episode. But in the second episode, she was already looking up to him as some sort of hero, maybe even an elder, like someone wiser and cleverer to look up to. And he was starting to care about her. Anyway.
Meanwhile...
From this conversation that they're having, we also learn a few things about what's going on. The creatures outside are described as an advanced guard to something else. And this something else, clearly, the Doc confirms, is connected to Tommy's stylophone. So now he's going to... Well, they now intend to go and get the stylophone off Emo Tommy. Cut to Arnie and the twins. Emo Tommy communicating with what are referred to as the only ones, who tell him that the Doc is not to be trusted.
Well, the only ones are obviously quite sensible then. And we also, again, this is another scene where Arnie is actually being quite creepy.
Oh, is this the whole I own you bit?
Yes.
Oh,
and
so weird.
Trisha wants to go and sit next to Lucy. You know, which is sensible. Two girls, roughly the same age, want to go and chat about clothing and music. Absolutely the most sensible thing to do.
Sure.
But Arnold won't let her out of his sight, and Trisha says, well, stop treating me like you own me, and he just goes, you should check your contract. I do.
Yeah, because there's a weird slavery/paedophile clause in there somewhere. Really, really creepy, Arnie. Thank you.
Lucy now, still wondering who this leather-clad woman is, goes over and talks to her. And then Lucy hears what the person's name is.
Yeah.
Patricia Ryder.
Blam.
Pat, Auntie Pat. This can't end well. Lucy absolutely is hysterical at this point. She's happy. Lucy's not making any sense to her, but says, "You're my Auntie Pat. You were a drummer in Methylated Spirits. You had a sister who worked in Clark's." And Pat just goes, "Is this some sort of mind reading act?"
Oh yeah.
And then Lucy says, "No, I'm a time traveler from the future." Yeah. Flo, on the other hand, who's been listening to this, just comes along and completely deadpans, yep, that makes a lot of sense. Lucy gives the game away, explains that, you know, she and the Doctor travel in time and space. She starts talking, and she's getting more and more worked up and excited over this. And, you know, says, oh, you told me you should go out and, you know, see the world, go and, you know, make something of yourself because You didn't do anything.
It's even harsher than that, I think. The note I've made is basically Auntie Pat asking Lucy what she is in the future, and Lucy immediately and without hesitation saying, "You're nothing."
She doesn't say it nastily.
She just goes, "Yeah, you're nothing. You're just Auntie Pat." And yeah. Then she sort of tries to dig herself back out again by saying, "Well, you know, you've got lots of loved ones and everything's nice and sunny. But you didn't make it. You're not a musician. You're not going to be remembered by anyone, basically." And she has no kids.
And she has no kids of her own, and... You do actually feel quite sorry for Auntie Pat at this point, who's just been told that she's got a niece who's a time traveller and she sits at home and knits. You know, it's never good. But we now cut to Arnold, who is getting worse and worse and worse. He now just grabs Trisha by the wrist, twists her wrist, and drags her and the vacuum of personality that is Tommy away.
Yeah, he is, by the way, fired during this minor altercation. Trish basically just goes, "Oh, you're fired. You are no longer our manager." And he does not care at all. And I don't know if this is true. I've written in my notes, I think he pulls a knife and forces the twins out with him, but I'm not sure that's the case.
No, he does. He drags them into the kitchen and pulls a knife.
Jesus Christ.
We're getting a hostage situation here. Yeah. You know, he's got Trish by the arm, which he is blatantly hurting. He has a knife, because he's walked into the kitchen where Lucy Miller, Pat and Flo are having their little chat about time travel.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is quite nasty, but it's played by Bernard Cribbins. You know, underground, overground, wombling free with a knife. It doesn't quite work, but, you know, the doctor turns up and says, "Right, everyone get away from Arnold."
And then they
Arnold wants to go outside.
Well, they do go outside.
Trisha, who is being dragged by Arnold at this point, goes outside with Arnold. The doctor follows, and then the doctor follows.
Okay.
Because he's trying to get Arnold to come back in.
Oh, yeah, right.
And then the monsters go and eat Trisha.
Yeah, really violently, brutally, savagely, they attack and eat Trisha, while we, in the meantime, in the background, are treated to some pseudo rock and roll. It is awful.
It is, because that would be an absolutely brilliant and quite powerful scene. But we immediately swap to stylophone in Tommy's head.
Yeah, he's gone uber mega emo. He's practically cutting himself whilst distributing selfies. This guy is so pathetic at this point. I got a question for you, because I'm not sure if I don't remember this, to be honest. Did he not go outside with Arnie and Trish? Did he stay inside?
This is the problem. He did go outside because the doctor brings him back in.
Okay.
But frankly, you wouldn't know it, because he doesn't do anything in the scene bar talk to the voices in his head. But he must have seen it, because the voices in his head goes, "It's only planet Earth. Your sister was just a human. It's not important."
Yeah.
So he must have gone outside and seen it, but you wouldn't know, because he's actually irrelevant to the scene.
And it's really weird, because he has a very delayed reaction. I mean, he's going to go completely just ape nuts when he realizes that his sister is dead. But if he saw her get killed, then surely he would have gone ape nuts whilst outside.
He is just, in this episode, quite badly written.
Yeah, that's true.
We don't know whether, at this point, he is possessed by the voices in his head, which would make sense.
Yeah.
Because that would indicate the complete change of character that comes across in about 10 minutes' time.
Yeah, true.
But it's never said that he is possessed.
True.
So, the doctor grabs Bernard Cribbins and Tommy and drags them back inside and reseals the door. Tommy is now just catatonically just sitting there, not doing anything, so the same as he has been since the beginning of the episode.
Doesn't he start arguing, though, that the aliens can help get her back to life? Or is that later on? Maybe that's later on.
No, that's pretty much immediately after this. But okay. The only thing we get before is basically they now turn on Arnold.
Oh, right. Okay.
The doctor has a go at him, tells him he's a stupid old man. He's tempted to throw, you know, Arnold out to the monsters.
Yeah. That still have not been described properly.
Auntie Pat is fuming.
Yeah. But it is weird because she is digging through Lucy's bag looking for codeine, is it? And she finds ibuprofen. She's looking for this to give to Arnold, but she finds the ibuprofen. By the way, it's a callback to in the very beginning when Lucy is almost ready to barf in the TARDIS. Callback. Now Auntie Pat is finding that ibuprofen in her bag. And
yeah, and at least they're using the ibuprofen for the right thing this time, a pain in the leg rather than the stomach upset, which made no sense. But
I'm sure, a few medical students / doctors in our audience right now who are applauding. Thank you, someone, for having noted that. But the ibuprofen is not the only thing she finds in the bank. She also stumbles upon her niece's MP3 player and understands that it's a future thing. And this is basically the moment that she goes, ah, shitballs, my niece was actually telling the truth. As in, she is actually my niece. Now I get it. She is from the future.
Yeah, and Arnold starts whinging again. Flo is completely unsympathetic, suggests accusating it.
Yeah.
He continues to whinge, and Pat, while, you know, going to help with the ibuprofen, threatens to zap him with the empty tree player, as she calls it, which gives the doctor one of those light bulb moments that happens in his head,
yeah,
and goes, right, I have an idea, and he starts getting his ideas.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Tommy. He stopped being catatonic and has gained a personality.
Yeah, he's now chatting with Lucy and telling her that they're called the Only Ones, these creatures, aliens, and explains why they're called the Only Ones. This does not make much sense to me at all, by the way.
Well, he says that there are only really the humans in the galaxy and this other race. So they thought, until he found the humans, they were the Only Ones.
Oh, I see.
But Lucy, on the other hand, who at this point says, yeah, I know there's lots of different races and life forms out there. There's millions of billions. I've seen some of them, which indicates, yes, she probably has been in other adventures.
Exactly.
Doctor.
Bingo. Says that, well, these so-called Only Ones have been lying to you.
Yeah, that, you know, there's millions out there. There's millions of billions of life forms. The universe is teeming with life, just like the Trafford Centre on Boxing Day. which probably is where Lucy goes to shop at Primark,
nice,
as I said last week. But Tommy, who is you know, actually quite a bit upset at this point over Trish's death, says that the Only Ones have special powers and might be able to bring them back.
Oh, I see. Now that's what that happens. All right. Sorry, I got mixed up. Anyway, so back to the Doctor.
Who is playing with the fucking stylophone.
He is playing with the stylophone. Getting, Mr. Arnie Korns to sing or try to sing the tune that we have hated hearing being played for real, quote-unquote, by Emo Tommy. So now we get to hear it being played and being sung by Bernard Cribbins. This is the death of a hero, essentially. Whilst Doc is asking to get either a funnel or a colander, which he is somehow going to MacGyver into his MP3 player to use as some sort of weapon or anti-alien device. And we get a fantastic line. This is my favourite line in the whole show.
Go on.
I think we need a soundbite. I couldn't do it credit. Soundbite.
Soundbite.
I want to reverse its what's it and make it a thingy.
Considering the amount of technobabble that occurs, you know, in reversing the polarity of the neutron flow.
Yeah.
He just delivers it with completely deadpan.
Yeah,
and
it's great.
He's obviously really enjoying it.
He's doing it in the same style, the same manner as in Night of the Doctor, where he
bring me knitting.
Yeah.
Yes. And this was done in, you know, 2007, I think. This audiobook. So, you know, 7 years later, he's still playing the Doctor exactly the same. And we do get a good scene between Flo and the Doctor at this point. Flo says that she's glad that there is someone out there who knows about things.
Yeah.
So years ago, her generation thought that they knew everything, but these days she realizes that they actually don't know anything.
Exactly.
And it's a really good scene. You know, it's just a small little thing, but it's just a character note for Flo. And, you know, she's probably in this not very important. She's a bit part, but she has some very good scenes with the Doctor.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, on the glass walkway, Tommy discovers that his stylophone is missing.
Yes! Thank God. It's a shame someone else is playing it at this time.
Yes, unfortunately, someone still got it and it hasn't been lost.
Yeah, so he takes Pat hostage.
He takes Pat hostage. Yeah. And, you know, this is another one of these things where it could have been a lot more dark than it is. Because we know that Pat is anti-Pat to Lucy.
Yeah.
If Pat dies now, then the wisdom that she imparted to Lucy Miller will later on in life...
Yeah, it's going to, like, vanish. George McFly out of her head.
Unfortunately, the person that's holding her hostage...
is a member of Boyzone and incapable of inflicting that kind of psychological damage on our protagonist.
Meanwhile, downstairs, in the childish part of the episode, the Doctor finishes adjusting the stylophone.
And we get to hear those really shitty aliens.
They're not good. And that's being polite.
Yeah.
The voice promises that, you know, to take them away, that Bramlington's no good, that 1974's no good.
Yeah, come with us into space, we are really shitty aliens, is what they say.
You know, it's the episode of The Simpsons where Mr. Burns goes around saying peace and love. You know, it's that level of voice.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Anyway, Lucy arrives, and she's a bit upset because, you know, Tommy is strangling Pat. And...
wait, what did Lucy do? I don't remember this at all. I remember Arnie suddenly stepping up.
Lucy comes down and says, Tommy's strangling Pat.
Okay.
Then the Doctor realises that, well, he's played the tune and he's allowed the aliens to arrive. And then all the windows break in and the monsters start coming.
Okay.
Arnold, in a complete personality reversal from a minute ago, offers to hold them off.
Yeah, to, like, distract these beasts with his tender flesh. It makes no sense. Why would he do this?
Because it's played by Ben Cribbins, and this is the most believable he's been all episode.
That's a very good point. Okay.
This is how Bernard Cribbins plays things, you know. He's going to go out and be heroic. He's 109. Yeah. He's going to go out, he's going to be heroic, and he's going to give the Doctor, Lucy, Pat, Flo, and the personality void enough time to solve the problem.
Yeah. And so, while he does so, Emo Tommy actually comes back in with Pat.
Yeah, and...
he saves the day, basically. So now Tommy starts playing his annoying stylophone again. The aliens actually do arrive. Should we maybe have a soundbite of the aliens? I don't know if we've had a soundbite of the aliens yet. Should we maybe inflict... should we ruin this podcast by including a soundbite of the aliens? Is it strong enough to withstand...
normally, you know, we both agree and we both say the magic soundbite words and one appears. You are doing this on your own.
Oh, reluctant soundbites. There you go. You're welcome, ladies and gentlemen. So the aliens, they recognize Doc. Dude, go for it. Go for it.
I don't know how they recognize a doctor. It's not mentioned. You know, it's probably one of the races that he met once and stuck in a box. You know, these only
they say
ones...
they've heard of him. Like, he's famous, basically. Like, his reputation precedes him or something. They don't say that, but they say something to that effect, I think.
Yeah, and which is actually quite strange, because at this point in Doctor Who's history, he's not.
Oh, really?
That sort of...
McGann is still a mystery to most of the universe?
He turned, well, apart from to, you know, Daleks and Cybermen, he, you know, he's just a traveller, you know, he's a Time Lord. This is when there were Time Lords everywhere, you know, this was before the fall of Gallifrey.
Okay.
And so, you know, he's just a Time Lord, he's just a person who travels with a companion, you know, getting into scrapes. The Daleks know him, the Cybermen know him. That's about it, you know, a few other reoccurring monsters, but there isn't any real sort of notoriety to him that he is known by the entire galaxy. He's not like the Smith Doctor,
who's a celebrity.
Everyone knows.
Everyone knows him, everyone fears him.
Yeah.
And or
respects him. So these only ones, which never appear again, as far as I'm aware.
Is this the only one instance of them? Sorry. I wish I could put sound to the look on your face a moment ago. That was priceless. Okay.
Lucy thinks they look beautiful. The Doctor thinks they look barely average.
Yeah, like meh.
Yeah.
androgynous wraith-like creatures or something to that effect.
You know, and they are very like the Gelf or something from, you know, from Doctor Who. It's they are what you expect the monsters to look like.
Yeah.
And whether this is, it's never expressly said if everyone sees them differently, but because we know from Pat and Flo outside that the monsters are seen differently by different people, it is possible the Doctor doesn't really see them as beautiful, but Lucy does because she's expecting, you know, these beautiful looking people. Yeah. We don't know. But Tommy gets a bit pissed off, well, as pissed off as he ever does in this episode, that the Doctor doesn't complain them and says that they're bringing peace and love. He actually does say that in the Mr. Burns voice.
Oh,
and then the Doctor basically says, well, aliens always want something, so what do you want?
Yeah, we need to add some gravitas to this scene, because this is the dumbest thing in the entire episode. These creatures have a hidden agenda. Emphasis on hidden, and all that is required for anyone, literally anyone, to just Scooby-Doo them and get them to reveal everything is to ask them, and they will happily just volunteer the truth.
Yeah, this made no sense. It's the Bond villain syndrome, where they have in Tommy this person that believes totally in them, and they need Tommy.
Yeah.
So when the Doctor confronts them, what they actually say is, yes, Tommy, we've come here because we love you and because we want to eat the entire planet. If they had have just thought about not adding that bit of the sentence,
it'd be fine.
This would have gone completely differently.
But it's not even the entire planet, because they have to phrase this in an even more shitty way. They say they want to tuck into his fan base. They basically want to eat his teenage groupies.
Well, to be fair, that's what she said.
That is what she said. Well done. It's like you were there.
This is, you know, and they reveal that the creatures that are outside are actually the bodies of the mysterious voices, and the fact that they're stopping off here to have some food is just a metaphor for something.
Wow, I did not get this at all. Wait, say that again. The beasts outside are the actual physical bodies?
Bodies are the only ones.
Oh, wow, I didn't get that at all. I even, at the end of the episode, did not understand that. I thought they were some sort of vanguard that was sent ahead, like guard dogs or something.
I assume that they are.
You're probably right. I probably misunderstood this.
Or not. It could very well be me. Anyway, yes, they want to eat Tommy's teenage fans.
Ugh.
And, you know, Tommy, gaining some balls at this point, asks whether his sister was important. And they laugh. So not only have they given away their game plan, they're alienating the one person that they need.
Yeah.
They
and
say...
whose body they are apparently going to take over.
Yes, so he created the music, he's vital to their plans, and everyone else is just like, you know, Philadelphia. So, Tommy now argues that they were the Tomorrow Twins, that they're twins. You can, you know, you need both of them because he can't be alone.
Yeah.
And then he faints for no reason.
Yeah. And then Doc goes, you know what? This has gone on long enough. I'm going to turn you back into sound. And he asks Flo for the funnel, which she forgot.
Being played by Una Stubbs, who has this reputation for being scatterbrained, it's not surprising that she forgot the funnel.
Yeah. And correct me if I'm wrong. A funnel, I mean, in this case, it's a small thing. It's not like an industrial funnel. It's not something that he would need to ask someone else to carry for him. If this is an integral part of his plan, why would he not just... In fact, you know what? Cut the whole thing that he didn't carry it himself. Why hadn't he already assembled the weapon?
Well, exactly, because, you know, a small funnel or a colander could be attached to the top of the MP3 player and we're done. And he just points it and clicks.
Yeah, but he didn't. And Flo forgot the funnel. Enter the real hero of this story.
Arnold, who has now escaped death twice,
yeah,
explains that he fought off the monsters with a chip pan.
Yeah. Or oil, wasn't it? Like he took...
It was hot chip fat.
That's what it was. Yeah, you're right. Exactly.
And he struggled up the stairs to the glass walkway above the motorway.
Yeah.
to give them the funnel.
Yeah. He realized that Flo had forgotten it, picked up the funnel, joined them.
It was like someone wrote the first half of the episode with a character called Arnold Korns and wrote the second half of the episode with Ian Chesterton.
Yeah.
And they merged the bit in the middle and had Bernard Cribbins play both parts.
Nice. That's a brilliant observation. So now the Doctor assembles his weapon. A beast approaches. Doc doesn't press the button. He tells Flo to press the button. She does so, and the MP3 player slash funnel turns the aliens and the beasts, that may be the same aliens, back into sound. This is ridiculous.
And it almost makes sense. But like a lot of the things in this episode, it almost makes sense. Yeah. It doesn't quite make that leap.
Most of these things would be great in a sort of deliberately kitschy science fiction story if there were some sort of logical foundation to it. But we haven't heard anything about this prior. All of a sudden, there's just, oh, well, attach these two things and boom, you turn them back into sound. But we didn't even know that they were sound to begin with. We didn't know anything. I assumed that the sound somehow opened a gateway to a different dimension or created a vortex somewhere in the universe, and that then led them to Earth. I didn't know that they were sound to begin with. I had no idea.
No, and, you know, we learned about it 5 minutes before it was the MP3 player. So
yeah,
it was like there's a lot of information that we haven't been given.
Yeah. Anyway, so, basically, this is the end of the story. Because now the good guys have won.
And the aliens are trapped in shuffle mode on the MP3 player.
Yeah.
And Lucy has the sanest reaction to this when is told by the Doctor to keep carrying it around with her.
Yeah.
Why would I ever want to do this?
Yeah, but the Doctor says, well, you never know. It might come in handy, having some monsters on the MP3 player. I really hope that they do come in handy, by the way.
Spoiler alert. No.
Oh.
Not as far as I'm aware, unless it's a small plot point in something I don't know about. But,
okay.
You know, it is not something that I know of in the ones that I have listened to, and I haven't listened to them all, that it's not really relevant. But.
So that emo boy wakes up.
And for no reason, Arnold offers to look after him.
Yeah, Arnold is now some sort of father figure to Tommy, and he basically says, it's fine because I know all about disillusionment. And this is meant to be the happy resolution to the Tomorrow Twins conundrum. What is Arnie going to tell him? Is he going to say like, oh, well, you know what? I know that I got your sister brutally savaged by giant alien beasts and I almost got you killed as well. But I can relate to your loss because you see, I used to own this Bentley. Like, it's completely absurd. A moment ago, shortly before Brian Emo fainted, he hated Arnie Korns for having kidnapped his sister, caused her death.
Yeah.
Now he's going to look up to him like he's his dad.
And it's like he was a different person than when he arrived.
Yeah.
But there wasn't a gradual change over the episode, which you can understand if, you know, in a high adrenaline situation, he might see things that are happening and sort of become a bit lighter and lighter and lighter. No, it was one moment he was evil.
Yeah.
And then literally 30 seconds later, he was good.
True. And not just good. He's a hero.
Oh, yeah. Without this, they would all have died without him.
Yeah, well, exactly. Practically, he's a hero, but also morally, he's a hero because he then sort of takes one for Team Korns by taking on this emo kid as his, I don't know, pet project or surrogate kid, which is very strange because we've never had any reason to think. Let's say he had a kid who died in some freak stylophone accident. It would make sense to now have him somehow pseudo-adopt Tommy to take on that role because he needs to, for lack of a better word, funnel his fatherly love to someone.
Moving on from that pun.
I apologise.
Flo and Pat go and make some food because like all good British people, they've had a traumatic experience so they want sausage rolls and tea.
Yeah.
and then we sug via stylophone to the I don't know why it's still playing. We've moved on from that plot point. But Lucy and the Doctor head outside.
Yeah.
The Doctor says that he understands Tommy, which none of the rest of us did. And, you know, that he wants to go out and see the universe. So then, for no apparent reason, the Doctor explains that the damage to the service station would be attributed to Hell's Angels.
Yeah. And he adds a tiny little nugget of information saying that he once tried to join the Martian chapter of the Hells Angels as part of some elaborate ruse.
And then we get, as it's the sound fades away, he mentions Jamie and Zoe. Oh. So it was obviously the second Doctor who is the least likely to have joined Hell's Angels. I can't see Troughton on the back of a motorcycle. I could see Pertwee doing it.
Okay.
I could see McCoy, either of the Bakers, but I couldn't see Troughton being a member of Hell's Angels. But it's a nice little note.
I think it's quite sweet. I think it's a fun note to end on.
If only it had ended at that point.
Exactly, because we are now going to get... It's not that bad and an extra ending sequence. It's not like we're back on, what's it called, the Vortis, and the crew has already left and we're treated to 5 minutes of talking to the stars. This is now the very last sequence where we're back at the service station. There's a knock on the door, and in steps the headhunter.
Who we heard from at the end of the last episode.
Exactly.
And she's looking for Lucy Miller.
Surprise, surprise. Wants to know where Lucy is, and I think basically Pat just goes, well, I'm not going to see her for decades.
And then we get the end credits.
Yeah. Kind of a glam rocky style.
Oh, it's awful.
Yeah,
it's,
it is pretty bad.
It's almost stylophone bad.
Yeah.
It is done in not even good glam rock style.
No, it's like really cheap free stock footage level glam rock style.
Thankfully, we do have the narrator reading the end credits over it, so you can't hear it for very long.
True.
But it automatically knocked off half a point just for ruining the end credits. And that was Horror of Glam Rock.
Yeah. Well, that was interesting. I'm no longer as thankful for having been introduced to this series after having listened to that. No, I'm kidding. We've been saying that it's a really bad show, or a really bad episode, and to a certain degree, that is perfectly accurate. It is a shitty episode. But it really only is a terrible episode because it's not a serious one, and it follows on very abruptly from Blood of the Daleks. Blood of the Daleks, sorry, I think kind of I'm already segueing into my review here. Blood of the Daleks was a fantastically serious story with very dark themes, with fantastic acting, and where the characters took the story seriously. And this is one story that A, is not fleshed out, B, is... fucking dumb, and see where the actors aren't even taking it seriously. They're just sort of having a laugh, and it doesn't work. So I think what I would say is sort of the good, to paraphrase someone I know and who is now part of Who Back When, the good, McGann, Smith, what's-his-face, Cribbins, and the vicious aliens, the actual beasts outside, the tiny little scenes where we have them. Oh, and the Foley as well. The Foley is fantastic. The bad, the expository dialogue, the shit aliens, the glam rock segues, which we have completely overlooked, by the way. The rushed ending, a seemingly interesting plot that turns uber childish and childishly rubbish, as though they were on a time constraint and had to tie it all up really quickly. And I guess lastly, the fact that we don't get any explanation to anything. This is there's enough of a plot to sustain maybe a 3-episode story, and it's squished into the second half of one episode. The first half of which is nothing but exposition that leads nowhere. In summary, okay, check this out. Sorry, it's late. I'm going to rate this in 2 ways and then do an average. If this is a comedy, which it is, I would give this a 2.2. But since I have to rate it as a serious story, it is a 1.4, which means what's immediate exactly between 1.4 and 2.2? 1.8. I'm giving this a 1.8.
This is a very different episode than Blood of the Daleks, and that is without saying.
Yeah.
The McGann stories, in general, tend to lean towards the dark.
Yeah.
And some of the best stories are the ones where it's dark. This is not one of the best stories. The concept is good. You know, aliens that are made of sound. Sadly, it's done far better in the Big Finish audio, Whispers of Terror. The guest cast here is amazing. You have Ewan Stubbs, you have Bernard Cribbins, you've got McGannon and Smith, who, you know, really have great chemistry.
Yeah.
And the sound effects are really good. The sound effects, the foleying, and the aliens outside. When you're in the service station, you can hear the cutlery. You can hear the knives and forks. When they're going up to the walkway, you can hear the wind outside. That's all very good. And then, unfortunately, you get the bad bits of the episode, which is you're let down by that bloody stylophone. Because I've asked for Punkin to put on the review of this episode an actual link to the full song, which is on Stephen Gately's MySpace page.
Yeah, check the website,
whobackwhen.com, and it will be there. And you can listen to the entire thing. And the stylophone is actually only the intro. It's actually not it's not a great song, but it's only the intro. But that's irritating. Monsters are vague. They're very vague. They're not explained. Stephen Gately isn't meant to be an actor, and, you know, sad that he passed away, but he was a brilliant musician. Great singer. Sadly, not an actor. And you have the amazing characterization of Arnold Korns, which magically, in the middle of the episode, swapped from one end of the spectrum to the other. So overall, it's quite a bit of a mishmash. It could have been a lot better, but it wasn't. I'm not going to rate it as two parts because I don't even think it's good enough to be a comedy. You know, on Who Back When, you've reviewed The Romans already, which is a comedy, which is a farce.
Yeah.
And that's very funny. It's done properly. This isn't. This is just lackluster. So I'm giving it a 2.1.
Okay.
Out of 5. And a lot of that is for the voice talents in this. The Ewan Stubbs, the Bernard Cribbins, Catriona Olsen as the headhunter right at the end, but mainly for Smith and McGann. The actual story, yeah, I easily took a point off purely for the aliens. So 2.1.
2.1, nice. We're pretty close to each other in terms of ratings here.
Yes, yeah, I think that I was being a bit more generous, mainly because...
Your secret love of Bernard Cribbins.
My desire to listen to the Wombles over and over again. So. next time, we will be looking at Immortal Beloved.
I have no idea what it's about, but I did hear I did read someone's line about it saying that it was fantastic.
It is better than this episode.
Great, I look forward to dealing out more than 1.8 the next time. Ladies and gentlemen, you need to follow JD on Twitter. I follow him on Twitter, and if I follow him on Twitter, surely you can't go wrong in following this man on Twitter. He is at Marius Kane, that's Kane with a K. While you're at it, follow me on Twitter, I'm at Punkin.
And that's Punkin with a P.
Yes, it is. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/whobackwhen, all in one word. And subscribe to us on iTunes. Yeah, so catch you next time. Oh, actually, one last appeal. Please, if you've heard the next audiobook already, seriously, why not send us a mini review of it? We'll be happy to share it in the ether.
And it's anything to stop us writing our own material.
Yeah. Thank goodness. Okie dokie. Catch you next week. JD, it's been a pleasure chatting with you again.
It's been a pleasure chatting with you again. I don't have a catchphrase.
Toodle pip, everyone. Ciao, ciao.
Back when.